wonderfuls, welcome to episode 302 of the JV Club with my guest, Brita Wohl. I want to quickly shout out Alicia for your wonderful email. I want to remind people that I will be doing multiple shows, possibly too many shows, at SF Sketchfest this year, the festival I co-founded with my partners, Cole Stratton and David Owen. I think I'm doing like 9 or 10 shows, but they're all going to be really fun, and they are all populated with people far more talented than I. One of which is actually a show called Voyage of the Stars, which is our first weekend on Saturday the 12th. I'm very excited about it. It will also star Felicia Day and Colton Dunn and Steve Berg, as well as our guest Tom Link and more. So if you're interested in that or any of the other shows I'm doing, you can visit sfsketchfest.com for more. And then I am also very excited to announce I will be at Pod X this year. Pod X is a podcast convention. I will give you more information about that in an upcoming intro, but you can give PodX a Google and find out some other really great podcasts that are going to be there. I'm super excited about it. And finally, I just want to finish by saying that if you are not familiar with Brita Wohl's work at this point, I highly encourage you to do so. She has been featured on the show Unreal, which I have interviewed a couple of wonderful people from. And she, I really discovered her for my own self when I was watching Mr. Mercedes season one. It has since had a second season. And I think that she is on her way to becoming a massive star. I am just an enormous fan. So I hope you enjoy the episode and I will talk to you soon. And I'm just going to start. There's also no important message that needs to be put out into the world before I start talking with you. The real intro that plays right before this, then a theme song. Then it's just us, just you and me.
Okay, cool.
All day long. It's an all-dayer. Did I warn you? It's an all-day podcast.
Oh, it's a marathon?
Yeah, it's not raising any money. So it's like a telethon with no point.
Oh, cool.
There's absolutely no purpose to it.
Oh, I've always wanted to do that. A telethon?
Yeah. Have you always wanted to do a telethon?
I mean, I was a telemarketer when I was a teenager.
You know what?
I worked at MBNA.
You're the second person in a row, and your episode will come out in a handful of weeks. So it's because I'm actually in the middle of my Boys of Summer series where I just interview men.
Oh.
But I was so excited to podcast you that I didn't want the opportunity to slip away.
Yeah.
It's a little bit creepy.
No, slipping away?
I really hunted you down.
Yeah, it's cool.
But he also did telemarketing, and I have not spoken to anyone who is a telemarketer in recent memory. So it's funny that back to back.
16.
Yeah. How'd that feel?
I quit after like a week and a half, I think, or 2 weeks. I couldn't understand how anyone made money. I also did canvassing and selling like Strats cards in the street for like $2 or $3.
Wait, what kind of cards?
Like scratch cards for a charity.
Okay.
It was like, but all of those things are scams to make money for yourself.
Uh-huh.
Like if you're making money trying to raise money or sell something, you get a certain amount of like points for like if you sell this to this, then you get a percentage of this and this. So you're like trying to swindle people while trying to like raise money for the environment.
Yeah.
You know, like the kids out on Vermont or whatever, on
selling
Hillhurst,
chocolate.
The chocolate selling kids, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to be raising money for like their like cheerleading team or something.
They probably
which
are.
I also did, and we could never sell anything there either. And then your parents would just end up buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. What I feel like I remember is magazine subscriptions, even though I don't feel I actually sold magazine subscriptions. I feel like that was a thing that I was too young for, but that I like on the tail end, I was like, I guess one day I'll be selling magazine subscriptions as a teenager. But then like that never happened. But that was a thing too. It's like, would you like to get People magazine?
I remember I bought, I was on a Law and Order back in the day in New York City. And I like went home to my mom's house. And a woman, somebody knocked on the door and these two kids were selling magazine subscriptions. And the woman goes, oh my God, I saw you on Law and Order last night. And my mom was there, and my mom became so proud and like so. I think I was like a crazy lady in a bathtub, like shivering.
Okay, sure.
And like a schizophrenic woman in a bathtub, and like I like had like friends who had had mental illness as a kid, and like I took it so seriously, but then I was literally on it for like 2 seconds. but the woman selling the magazine subscriptions noticed me in front of my mother, which was like, you know, all of the pistons firing of like, what does it mean to succeed in this world out there? Like, do something and then have your mother see it.
Yeah.
But I bought all the magazine subscriptions.
Yeah, it worked.
It totally
worked.
She said
that to everyone, and she just got lucky.
Did I see you on Law & Order?
Everybody else was like, oh, you think I'm an actor? Yeah, I'm
one
so
out
flattered.
Of 10 times it works. You're like, yeah, I was on Law & Order.
But that is very like, I guess that feels specific. I mean, especially since you just said you weren't on it for that long. So the idea that like it stuck with her enough that she was able to take a, because you know what I mean? Like sometimes you just see people you already know out of context and you forget you know them because you associate them with only one thing. So for her to have the presence of mind to have seen you in character in a bathtub shivering and recognize you were that self same person in real life, the actor, I'm very impressed with that woman.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Or maybe I ended up channeling like my experience with my friends or whatever. And
you opened up the door shivering.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's just very cold in here. No, wait, the shivering. She herself is a detective.
Yeah, I like to open doors shivering. I think it's good for, you know, I like to be meek so that people can dominate
idea.
Me easily. I'm into that.
It's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Was your mom visiting you or was your mom living in New York as well?
No, I was in Delaware.
Oh, you were in Delaware. Sorry, I missed that part.
No, I was living in New York City, and then I took the train down to Delaware.
Got it.
To hang out with my mom.
Is that where you're from originally?
I'm from Champaign, Urbana, Shampoo Banana, Illinois, and then moved to Delaware, and then moved to New York City, and then moved to Los Angeles.
I like that. Should I have known that it was, what is it? Shampoo Banana?
Shampoo Banana? Champaign, Urbana?
Is that what everyone says there? Or is that like your group of friends?
I think one person said it to me and I was like, yeah, shampoo banana. Shampoo banana.
The name Champaign Urbana come from? First of all, is that like a Dallas-Fort Worth thing where it's really two places that
it's
you sort
twin
of...
It's Twin Cities.
Oh, okay. All
I
right.
think.
This Twin City business is just not something that
you
get in Arizona.
I know.
I also
moved when I was 13.
Yeah.
So I never had a car there. So the Champaign was very far away and where the like fancy Republicans lived.
Mm-hmm. What a cliche. Urbana would be like the folksy one and Champaign would be
totally
where all the richies
was.
Are. That's hilarious.
No, that's totally what it was. Urbana was like University of Illinois.
Okay.
So my parents were, it was this, my father was an Irishman and he wanted to live in New York City. He wanted to come to the United States and live in New York City. And,
well, that's where the streets are lined with gold.
That's where the streets are lined with gold. Yeah. The, you know, what is that great song? The Boys of NYC.
Yeah, exactly.
Singing Broadway band.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, never mind. but yeah, my dad immigrated from Ireland following my mother. She was a foreign exchange student at UCC, University College Cork.
How about that?
And he came to New York City, but then was a professor. It was his first professorship in chemical engineering.
Okay.
He was a physicist and polymer physicist. But New York City went bankrupt. So he got this offer at this little podunk town, Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, that he said was a truck stop in the middle of cornfield.
Uh-huh.
but it's where University of Illinois is. And we went there and like I have two older sisters. And so we're raised in this crazy little town in the cornfield in the, you know, university town. Did you ever see the movie PCU, Politically Correct University?
I did.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the skate shop and like all the university bars and basically the entire town is supported and everybody's associated with a university.
Yeah.
And if they're not, then they're like farmers or...
Yeah. You know. That also has like a breaking away. Have you seen that 80s movie? It's a favorite of mine because it's one of my dad's favorite movies. Breaking away takes place in Indiana. And
it was like Breaking the Waves.
Different. Very different. Arguably as different as two movies could be. Breaking Away is a story of a young townie, as they are known if they're not from the university, in a probably a mining town, right? Because there's a big quarry.
Townie, that's right.
Yeah, they call him townies.
I grew up a townie.
They call him townies.
Yeah.
And he, and it's university town, and he wants to ride in the Tour de France. And my dad was a huge cyclist when I was a kid. So that's like, was one of his favorite movies. Dennis Quaid is in it. Very young Dennis Quaid. Very young Jackie Earle Haley. Very young Daniel Stern. It's a great cast. It's a great cast. Yeah. And they all, it's great. It's a great movie. It's a really, really good movie. But anyway, yeah. So townies. And the town, I went to college in Flagstaff, Arizona, which is fairly similar. I mean, it's like you're either of a logging kind of, but so much of it is like Route 66 shops. Because it's old Route 66, or it's all university kind of oriented.
No, I know. I drove that whole Route 66 from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Yeah. I've never done that. I think it would be kind of fun.
66 is all right.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like a highway for a lot.
Yeah. You're like, oh, these few stops are, I see why there's something.
66 is pretty cool. I went south on Texas too. Texas is a weird, weird
state. Takes a long time to get through.
There's a lot of like economic depression there.
Yeah.
I literally felt like I was like driving through like strangely Irish ghost towns.
Interesting.
Like towns that had not taken the like St. Patrick's Day parade like decorations down, because that was last like bastion of like joy that they had in that town. Anyway, I can't remember what the name of that town was, but there was a few towns like that. But anyway, what was I talking about?
We were talking about, so the sort of college town experience of everything sort of feels
so
like
I grew
it
up
feeds
in
the
this,
university.
Yeah. And so I grew up in this like town where everybody's parents, I lived in the state streets or the academic ghetto is what they called it. And because it was like everybody's parent was a professor.
Yeah.
And most people's professor parents were from another country. So it was this bizarre.
Okay. That's interesting. That is interesting.
And a lot of the people were like from, you know, European countries or India or, you know, Asian countries. And
I wonder how it became that magnet in that way. Like,
just because
it's
a great science department.
Yeah.
And
great.
So the sciences in American universities, especially in like higher levels of education, have a lot of foreign imports.
Yeah.
Foreign like intellectuals coming over and learning physics. And so the University of Illinois science department was, that's where the internet was invented or whatever. But yeah, they had, the university is fantastic there. So everybody's, it was like this, and college, I was an academic brat, which is a specific type of, it's basically where you can like every, you know, you can play concert cello at the age of 10, but you can't like wipe your ass. And it like stays like that forever.
You underdevelop in certain very key ways, but you overdevelop in others.
Yeah. Cause your parents are kind of like intellectual megalomaniacs, you know, who are trying to win Nobel prizes and like,
How about that?
Yeah.
That's so specific. That really is interesting.
It was an interesting upbringing. I have a friend who's Gabe Hobson, who's writing TV shows now. And he and I will commiserate on our extremely insane upbringing with these.
As
you
someone
know,
comes in and wipes your asses for you.
Yeah. As
disgusting.
Like,
I'll never know how they do that. Yeah. You say pointing behind
my,
you.
Yeah. As my dude is like doing the dishes because I don't know how to do the dishes. Oh, yeah. You find someone who thinks that all of your idiosyncrasies are
delightful and charming.
Yeah.
Quirky.
Idiosyncrasies? Is that the right
absolutely.
Word?
100%.
Oh, great.
Yeah. That education is really paying off. Yeah, now, cool. Is it a public school full of smart kids in the academic ghetto, or is it a private school? Like, how does the high school situation work?
The
in
high
this
school
place
is a
like
big
that?
Public high school. Yeah. It was like, and the middle
a little
school,
of everybody. So the smarties and the regularies.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah,
it was a huge. I actually didn't go to the high school there. We moved to Delaware. When I was 13, and I went to this little private
tough time
high school.
To move probably.
Oh yeah. It was some bullshit. I had the biggest, weirdest group of weirdo friends that I had grown up with my whole life.
Yeah.
And I moved to Delaware, which was like, I remember meeting some guy in, I just remember that my main, like, oh, I hate to talk about Delaware like this, and my mom still lives there and there's great people there. But I just remember, like, there was certain things that I had never confronted before or been confronted with, which was like racism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I grew up in this super...
Such a melting pot where you
melting
were.
Melting pot, kumbaya, like... Yeah. And I say that, but that, you know, I was very sort of entitled in my protectiveness. You know, it was this weird small town, highly intellectual, but also this small town mentality. And there was a lot of craziness that happened in Urbana as well. But I think my parents, their group of friends, our group of friends, you know, were these sort of bizarre, wild. My two older sisters were these, you know, I my parents are very feminist, you know, very progressive people. And, you know, we go to nude beaches and, like, you know.
Yeah.
There was a projection of what the future would hold in our generation, sure. You know, like, we were all, like, having seminars on HIV and how you contract it in, like, second grade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we wrote, I wrote a book that got published with my class in third grade with Nancy Coombs on, Frederick Douglass, you know, like, I had read his autobiographies by the time that I was, like,
wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and then all of a sudden I get to Delaware and
there it's was... It's possibly more like the rest of America in some ways.
It's weird. It's like East Coast.
Yeah.
So East Coast, it was like, you know, there was lots of things at the mall and, like, lots of money and lots of... Money didn't, like, make all that much sense when I was a kid. Like, people lived in nice big houses with a huge gradient of middle class, lower middle class to upper middle class to, you know, and everyone went to the same school. And then I was plopped in the East Coast where it's like, you know, there's a different history on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. There's a different, like, backstory there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that living in a Midwestern town that's based on a university, it was like everyone was just making up their own history as they went along.
Yeah.
You know,
God, I mean, speaking of, like, just coming off like a complete idiot, I will say, if I were likely to forget about the existence of certain states,
Illinois is one of them.
Not Illinois, oh. Delaware. I feel like I would forget that Delaware was a thing. I would be like, Delaware,
I
right?
If Delaware feels like it is.
Do you know what I mean?
Forgotten,
because, like, when you have these tiny states, there has to be some, like, what? I mean, other than, like, memorizing states or having American history when you're younger and in school, I feel like there has to be something sticky about how you think of it. And so there are a lot of East Coast states that mean something to me on a personal level for one reason or another, whether it's, like, my friend taught at the University of Rhode Island, or, you know, Baltimore is, like, where everyone writes their crime stories about, because it's fascinating and strange and it's tiny, but it draws attention to itself in that way. And I don't feel like I have anything personally sticky about
Delaware.
I'll
give you some references for
now
Delaware.
Now I do, because you're because I'll be like, oh, Breed is from Delaware.
Breed is from Delaware. Yeah. Well, it's weird because I felt like a total alien there.
Yeah.
Like and I looked like a total alien, and I seemed like I did not belong there at all.
Yeah.
Like, everything about me in Delaware did not go well. I mean, it went super well for a lot of, like... Like, I was getting into a lot of trouble in Illinois. And my friends there were, like, really wild.
Even so young. That's funny. Yeah.
Oh, we were, like...
Rascals.
I mean, people were getting pregnant. People were, like, on drugs. Like, it was, like...
Whoa!
Oh, we were, like...
Progressives.
Progressives, man.
Yeah, that comes along happens? With it. That's true, actually. Most of my friends in Tucson who were had the most hippie parents, I can't say that they were, like... So they almost rebelled against that and became... Like, they were definitely having sex and smoking pot way, way, way younger than anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people that came out of Illinois did super well. But a lot of people also have really rich pasts.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, it was... Nobody was sheltered. Nobody was, like... I mean, everybody, no matter where you come from, there's always, like, a little bit of a fall from grace, and you approach things and, like, experience naivete to some degree.
Sure.
But there was, and I definitely have a lot of that. I still have that where I'm like, wait, this is the world we're living in?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Like, yeah. what? You know, and it surprises me constantly as yeah. if it hasn't been like that the whole time.
No, I get that. I get that.
And I think a lot of that had to do with my parents specifically. But what you did have in Illinois was a lot of smart kids with a lot of energy and not a lot to do.
Right.
It was weird. A lot of people ended up doing very well in their lives, but had a real kind of, yeah, I mean, we were wild. We were all super wild.
Yeah.
There.
And so when you got to Delaware and you were in a private school, did you say all girls or just a private school?
No, that's it was just a private school. I think there was
it religious based private?
I think so. It might have been. I remember.
But clearly, you weren't like going to.
There was a girl
to...
who was in some big church.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to say her name.
Uh-huh.
Because she's still super religious, but she was real weird.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, we would go out and party in high school and we would be having fun and like going out and meeting people and having drinks. She was going out to like battle the devil. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She would like go out and. There was so much darkness in her just like going out to hang out with a boy and have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, it was all wrapped up in this like her soul was going to hell and rebellion and stuff.
That just sounds exhausting.
Her and I get into some Facebook battles even to this day. You know, she's like I felt like a lot of my experiences with the young women and some of them, but I my sister, you know, hung out with a lot of people whose politics now completely deny and defy their behavior as young people.
Mm-hmm.
And they have somehow erased what they did as young people
right.
just chalked it off as, oh, when you're young.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, like topics like abortion.
Right.
You know, where you literally forget that you had like two abortions and that you like were super... happy at the time that was an option for you, like extremely relieved and feeling like, oh, thank God, like literally thank God for abortion. And then
as soon as it's not your problem anymore.
And have kids and you're like,
yeah,
God tells you you can't have an abortion. And I'm like, oh, bitch, like that is not how that went down at all.
Yeah.
You know,
that's frustrating to see. And absolutely. And you sort of hope that someone's compassion will only grow as they get older, like as you have more life experience, as you, you know, are around and meet more humans as time goes by. You sort of hope that would, rather than restrict and tighten up, you want to think it's going to expand, you know?
I mean, it's self-hate, right? Like, you know, it's the microcosm of the conversation between you and yourself.
Yeah.
Is usually an extension of how you treat you and somebody else. You know?
Agreed.
Like, oh, I hate that I did that. I always, my best example of this is with my family.
Uh-huh.
Everything that annoys me about my family
Absolutely.
Is like what I dislike about myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially my older sister. Oh my gosh, I hope my sister Megan doesn't watch this or listen to this. But
Megan, could you come in
Megan!
Here, please?
Megan! Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to WKEP at Night. Up next, looks like we've got a PSA from local forest ranger Duck Newton.
Do I start now or?
Yeah, and lean in, Duck.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I wanted to address the unfortunate situation that... Okay, listen. Two people, good people that I and a lot of y'all have known our whole lives, are dead. Torn to shreds by...
A savage, bloodthirsty beast that defies human comprehension. If you'd like to know more, stop by the Cryptonomica, Kepler's premier museum of the macabre. Just off highway...
Come on. We just wanted to warn y'all, to beg you. If you see one of those things out in the forest, don't fight. Don't scream. Run. Run as far as you can.
Doc, it's almost midnight. Listen, folks, if you see anything, please go to thelamplighter.org and let us know. And get behind a locked door tonight.
Anything else we need to... Oh, they're leaving. Okay, well, that's thelamplighter.org, and stay safe out there, Kepler.
I actually just did a movie that I kind of based on my old... I have another sister, and I kind of based this role on her.
Oh, really?
I had to give her, like, 10...
Did you give her a heads up?
Oh, I had to be like, look, it's sort of based on you. But when you watch it, like, it's not going to be based on you. It's not you.
Right.
But it's like, literally, I've like robbed her entire voice.
Really?
And then put it into this movie.
Yeah. What is it?
It's a movie I made with my friend Kestrin Pantera Grubb, who's made a few movies. She, in January, before I went off to do Mr. Mercedes, she was like, I was like, hey, I'm around for a month if you want to make something. And she calls me like 2 days later and is like, let's make this feature film.
Amazing.
And then we were making a feature film like a few days later. And so she made we went in and she made a storyboard, and she had a storyboard ready. She had a whole story ready. And her, me and these four actors, Milana Vaintrup, I don't know if you know her.
I don't.
She's a very powerful witch. Sam Littlefield.
No one is ever going to describe me that way. And that just kind of made me sad for a second.
A very powerful witch?
Yeah. No one's going to be like, oh, just to drop it off as a side note, like Janna Varney, very powerful witch.
Very powerful
Moving
witch.
On to Sam Littlefield.
Yeah.
Okay. I just had to let that coast over me for a second.
Yeah. She is like, she's the kind of woman, if you're talking around a campfire, you know, really weird things will start happening.
Amazing. I want that.
Me too.
I would like to experience that.
Yeah. We can. We okay. can start a little fire. We can get you involved in
Well,
some,
I got
some
we
gotta
get her. Yeah, we gotta get her over here because I don't I feel like I've said this before in the podcast, but I do feel like I am yearning to have those kind of mystical experiences, and then somehow like it doesn't. Like, this is a bad example, but it is a accurate example, which is like somebody goes to see a psychic and they're like, five people go and they're all like, that was life changing for me. I can't believe it. I really believe now, blah, blah, blah. And then I see that same person. I'm like, this is a no, nothing was right. This is a hoax. Like, this person doesn't know anything about me and like got nothing right. And maybe that's self-denial. I highly doubt it. So I'm always hoping to want to have those. I want to be the person that's like, dude, I saw a ghost. And I feel like I'm never that person. So Oof. I'm ready to have a powerful witch shake it up.
I have so many thoughts on that.
Yeah?
Hell yeah, I have some thoughts on that.
Okay.
Well, I'm like, where do we even start? First of all, psychics, bollocks. I know I have a lot of friends who go to psychics. I have a group of friends who go to see a psychic on Skype who's in another country. Who like is super serious. I am like so anti-psychic because I feel like it's, you know, the Oedipus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Oedipus, you know,
unless it's a person, you know, named Oedipus, otherwise,
no.
I would be like, very powerful wizard.
Do you know Oedipus? He lives down on like
Beachwood. That was a weird choice for a name for sure. Yeah.
I'm like, I might name my son Oedipus. I'll definitely name a dog Oedipus, but, so everyone always remembers Oedipus as the Freudian, like, you want to kill your father and have sex with your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, but I always think of it as if his father hadn't gone to the psychic in the first place, none of that shit would have happened.
Yeah.
And I refuse to go to psychics on the basis that even if it's absolute garbage or completely accurate.
You manifest your own future
because
you assume that they're right. If someone could,
even if you assume that they're
wrong, it might still unconsciously. Yeah.
So if a crazy lady in a caravan in Ireland says to you that you're going to be a, which happened to me. I went when I was 15 to a traveling woman in a caravan in Ireland, and she told me I was going to be a cop. Well, first she said I was going to be a model, and I was like, I did do modeling when I was a kid, I was like, I've already done that, and I thought it was stupid. I don't want to do that. Uh-huh. I already like accomplished that.
And I'm sure she was like,
not that modeling is stupid.
I did see it though. That I clearly saw that for you, but I was seeing your past.
Yes.
Moving on.
Yes.
Now let's look at your future.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And modeling isn't stupid. I actually really like modeling, but it wasn't right for me.
It wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. I wanted to make goofy faces.
Yeah,
which you can do. Never mind. That's a side. You gotta. I'm like. By the way, I'll be a divergent queen. Like,
welcome to my podcast.
Oh, cool.
That's the only thing I know how to do. No. But I understand.
So
I understand
so
what you're saying. I did the same thing.
I
also experienced that. And I also have been told, like, you would be so pretty if you didn't move your face so much. So that was like my experience was like, oh, well, I don't think I could change that.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Anyway, so you were going to be a cop.
I think somebody told me to get off my, lay off the cookies and don't make my muscles too big.
Cool.
And I was like, I like cookies and I play sports.
Yeah.
So this is not going to
work for me. Yeah.
I also didn't like people controlling me.
Yeah.
I had like some major hints and variations of oppositional defiance disorder. Somebody coming along, and I was a deep, deep radical feminist in my behavior as a young woman.
Yeah.
With that crazy little group of ladies in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Mm-hmm. Like all sorts of weird. I mean, people were getting pregnant, but that was a byproduct of us like hosting weird, like, look at, you know, masturbation circles and
great
stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would have signed up for that.
Like we were super weird, yeah. And like doing all sorts of crazy shit. That was like very much permeated, like pushed by me.
Great.
Oh, anyone who knows me well knows that I'm a little freak. Or like a lot less of a freak, because I was a little freak, like quite literally like a shorter freak.
Yeah, I feel like I don't want to say I got it out of the way, because I have no sense of like, thank God that's over. But I do feel like there are things that I experienced very young and that I am sort of like, well, that was my time for that. And it's not as appealing to me now, probably for that reason. But like, I'm not dropping acid tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to do that. That's something that is a part of my past.
See, I missed the whole psychedelic thing. Mm. I'm like wanting to do that now. I'm like now at the point in my life where I'm like, it's time to do psychedelics.
See? Yeah. It just depends on when and how and where. That said, I mean, I'm fascinated by that whole microdosing thing. Like, I'm very interested in that.
Yeah. I don't drink anymore. So now I'm like, what about these other drugs?
Right. Yeah.
I've tried to smoke pot, but like, that's not a fun drug. I keep on trying to convince myself that it's a fun drug, but it just makes me look around my house and go, I'm filthy. I'm a filthy child woman.
Oh, sorry. I just saw a dead spider that really is not a spider. You know, the daddy long legs.
A cockroach?
No. It's just like a daddy long legs that I found out. Someone told me it was called a harvestman, which I was like, that's both better and scarier.
Very noble.
It is and isn't, because it's also like the harvest man.
Yeah,
coming
children
to
of the corn.
And yes. It has a... It's both creepier and better. But anyway, I saw it. And right when you were saying I'm filthy, I looked over and saw a little body.
You're like, oh.
It's right here.
Oh, he's good. He's good there.
Yeah.
That's where he lives now.
That's where, until one of the dogs licks him up.
Yeah.
It's
delicious dead carcass harvestman.
Yeah. But even with all the iterations of pot now, like that's the thing, is people are like, well, if you take this, if you eat this edible, you won't feel you're filthy. Instead, you will, you know, your brain will be doing cartwheels. Or this edible is good for just pain, and or this vape, if you vape that, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many strains now. Have you dabbled?
I have,
or has
tried,
it just sort of, yeah.
I like went and I got like all the things,
and
just all the things, and they're like
everything made
it's
you
like
want to clean.
Fun, like 20% of the time,
yeah.
And I never
That's
know
not a great
when
percentage.
That no, it's terrible,
yeah.
And it's like, I don't know when that 20% is coming along.
Yeah.
So like,
what?
It's probably a little bit more than 20%. It can be fun, but it's always like, oh my God, which is like, what, do I think that that's going to be fun tonight? Like,
right.
You know, like the self-consciousness goes skyrockets.
Yeah.
And I already have like so much like reverse thinking, where you imagine how you are being perceived through the other person's eyes, and then I like put pressure on myself to glamour people,
mm-hmm.
which is exhausting. And then you get stoned, and then that becomes even like maximized,
right
to be like, do you see what I see, what I see,
yeah.
what I see me,
yeah.
and I see me. Like this like creepy narcissistic loop that just like drains you of your energy.
Understood on every count. I am gonna use this as an opportunity to lavish praise on you, which is, I don't know, like, so I came after you after watching Mr. Mercedes, which was like, frankly, a show. Now there's billboards and now there's this and that, but that was a thing that like I wouldn't have known about had I not been sent a screener as being a member of the Academy. There was not, I mean, I'm just, this is like, I have been in that position where people are like, I would never would have known that was a show unless blah blah, and I'm like, that's makes me angry, yet I appreciate what you're saying and I can't argue. But I didn't know. And And I got the screener, was like, I have no understanding of this being a thing, except like, it's Brendan Gleeson and a bunch of other, and Kelly Lynch, who's a neighbor. And like, there's like, there's such a great cast. And Mary I was like, Lewis this, Parker, I gotta watch this. Yeah. Chile, it was just, it just blew me away that it was not something I'd heard of. And I watched it, and every performance is sublime, but you stood out to me so hardcore. And I was like, I said, I just have such like a talent crush on this girl. I gotta meet her. It's just such a great performance. And the reason I'm bringing it up is that to me, it's very difficult to be that. I don't even know how to describe it, but perhaps someone has already come along and done a better job. I'm sure people are like freaking out about how great you are. But the ability to seem like you're not on camera, but be so self-conscious that, okay, I've never tried to articulate this, but this is what I feel.
Okay.
I feel that your character feels like she's on camera all the time in terms of her like response to like, she feels like you just described, but you as an actor seem like you have no idea there's a camera, which is like the most meta shit ever. It's like, you're so natural being a character who feels like they're under a microscope of society.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would be able to, I don't know how that, I mean, I think it's just like something that's innate to you, because I don't know that I've ever seen someone be so awkward in such a natural, great way that felt, again, like you don't know there's a camera, and yet the character feels like, oh, where am I? Where do I fit in my body? Where do I fit in this store? Where do I fit in this uniform? Where do I fit in this friendship?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think it's so brilliant. I just think it's fantastic.
That's so cool that you saw that.
Yeah, I just think, and I was like,
I don't know if I'm doing that consciously, but I do.
I don't think you could be. I don't know if you could be, but you I do probably think know better than I do.
Storytelling is meta.
Yeah,
like there is no, you know, my friend, my best friend Jeffrey Boyer Chapman, always says that. What is he always says that Aubrey Plaza said to him, "It's all, you know, it's all a dream."
Yeah.
I mean, also Shakespeare, but
I got to give it up to Shakespeare on that one. Sorry, Aubrey Plaza.
You know, it's all like, what's the difference between the situation in Mr. Mercedes and my real situation? There isn't a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making it. We're all making it up as we go along.
Yeah.
Which is why the psychic freaks me out so much, because the psychic is like a writer that you've hired for the day. And that comes in and says, what about this possibility?
Yeah.
And once they say it, you can't, like, the concept that there is, like, a reality and that there is kind of, I don't know, I say that, and it's funny because almost all of my beliefs are contradictory and not necessarily contradictory. I just, everything I say is both a truth and a lie for myself.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, and so how do you know who you are? If, you know, how do you... We have a saying in my family, is like, remember who you are. Hmm. And my grandmother used to say it to my dad.
What
my
a
dad.
Terrifying statement for, if I'm, it, when someone says that to me, I find that existentially terrifying.
It's definitely existentially terrifying, but it's also, like a belief system, you know, you always have to go back to like, what do you believe in? And the belief system is that like, there is a place in you that can tolerate any and all things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that there is a place in you that exists, you know, without fear. And there's a place in you that's like quiet and silent and not temporary.
Yeah.
I think that that's what it means. I don't know.
I love that.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you remember who I'm definitely having a, it's confusing. Life is very confusing. And I think people just grapple with trying to make it less confusing. And the entire experience on everyone is just trying to make it less confusing.
Right.
So I actually kind of feel excited by when it gets more confusing,
mm-hmm.
which I think maybe is a confidence of remember who you are.
Right.
That I got from my parents.
Yeah.
Not to psychoanalyze myself too much, but those girls that I told you about from Champaign-Urbana, I met up with them in this. I mean, the story behind those girls is like, there was violence, fights. Like, warrants out for my arrest. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, and two of the girls had this rivalry, and one of them as an adult called the other one and said, let's have a weekend. And we went and we all hung out, and they were so affected by my parents.
Oh, wow.
As stable, loving family,
that they all had sort of shaped their life based on, especially my father passed away a few years ago,
and they were so deeply moved by his passing, even though they hadn't seen him. And so there was like this, they'd all had these stories of real intense pain and loss of knowing who they are and having to really feel very alone in the world.
Mm.
And I just wonder if like my loving parents just gave me that extra edge where I could think, maybe I'm not entirely alone
right.
in this world.
Right.
You know?
It's so funny because I'm an only child, and everything you just described to me like feels like an only child experience. And I sometimes like I have to tack back on like, oh yeah, sibling. Like, oh, okay, there are siblings. Like these girls may have had siblings, and that has no, that doesn't inform whether or not you feel alone at all. Like it doesn't.
Yeah.
But I only had my experience. So I know what it feels like to be alone in the sense of like a single parent over here, a single parent over here, no siblings, no step parents, no nothing, yeah. versus like feeling alone in a room full of a family. Or do you know what I mean? Like it's just a different, I sort of put myself in the picture, and then, yeah. and then I look around and there's no brothers or sisters and that lonely feeling. And then I just imagine it would be very different to have that. To have that sort of sense of not belonging and to have more people around to remind you of that in a sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's pure speculation. I'll never know, but
I'm like, I don't know what much I can talk about my sisters, but one of my sisters really struggles with feeling super, super alone. She really told me and opened up to me one time and just expressing kind of how you're feeling, like this like very deep sense of aloneness, and I was so pissed off with her just because I'm in general pissed off with her, but you know, we were fighting about fights that we had had when we were children outside of a spa in Whistler, Canada, in yeah. Whistler, Canada, like when I was shooting Unreal up there, and like my sister comes to visit me and we basically fought the entire time yeah. and had this screaming match outside of a spa, you know. Amazing. So after we were done like crying for hours and fighting, we went in and like soaked in the bath.
Sounds like a good
but she
solution,
you know, really expressed some feelings of being alone, and it made me so angry because I was like, don't you see? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like I'm built of the same brain as you. Like every feeling, every notion that you're talking about, I have had. You are inherently not alone, especially right now. Like I am with you. Yeah. I am feeling you. Yeah. I know exactly where you're coming from. And the only difference between her and I was like, basically the story.
Mm.
I had one story about my past and she had a completely different one, and we grew up in the same household.
Yeah.
And like my story was like epic and like, you know, want to make a movie about it and like tell it to everybody. And hers was sort of more like a history of being alone,
mm.
you know?
Yeah.
And,
but that goes back to the whole, I mean, everything you're saying about, in fact, I can't believe I already have forgotten the name of this documentary because it's so good. And I'm sure it'll like win the Academy Award for Best Documentary. But
what's it
about? It's the one about, it's about the triplets who were reunited through a series of like weird coincidences, essentially. It's a CNN documentary.
I know about the twins.
I guess I could look it up.
I think Chinese twins that were adopted into America. Have you ever seen that?
I have not, but I've heard of it. I definitely know what you're talking about.
The girl finds the girl on like Facebook or something. No,
yeah.
No, she was in Memoirs of a Geisha.
That's so bananas. Three identical strangers. So three identical strangers. It's a really, really good documentary, but And it's hard to talk about without giving too much away, but the gist of it that you sort of would read in a description is that these three triplets who were adopted out from a very specific adoption agency in New York, by absolute chance, one of them ended up going to the community college that his brother had gone to the previous year. His brother was not coming, but you find this out in like the first 5 minutes of the movie, but his brother had decided not to come back. But this other guy shows up at this community college and everyone is coming up to him and being like, "You came back. That's awesome." Like hugging him like, "Hey, buddy." And so he's like, goes to his dorm room and is just like stunned and doesn't know what is going on. It feels like he's in a dream. And then some guy comes in because somebody who knew he was best friends with this guy was like, "Hey, you need to like go find this dude." This guy comes in. And the first words out of his mouth are, "Were you adopted?" And the guy's like, "Yeah." And he goes, "You have a twin brother." And it just becomes like their quest to like, "Oh my God, we have to get the bottom of this."
That like gave me chills.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's in the title, but like, and then there is also a third brother.
No.
And then that person is found because that becomes a sensation, a media sensation. Like, "Oh my God, these two identical twins were found." And then the third brother is like, someone calls him and is like, "Hey, dude, two people who look just like you just found each other." It's bananas. I mean, it's shampoo bananas.
It's shampoo bananas.
It's bonkers. But what it immediately raises and what becomes this sort of like, I don't want to give too much away, but it is definitely like, here are these people with these same genes.
Yeah.
As close to being the same person as you can be without being a clone, but raised in these totally different, not ultimately different. It's not like one was in Mexico, one was in Kuwait, and one was in America, but certainly like their parents are very different from one another. They're, you know, their whole, like their money, they're this, they're that. And yet they have so very much in common. And so it really, one of the first things that it kind of bubbles to the surface is like, how much do we control, like how much do we control about who we are environmentally versus genetically? How predisposed are we to make these choices? And that's something that mathematicians get really interested in too, or like these sort of like when you
Did
combine
you know
behavioral
that?
Science with math, it's just this sort of like you think you have free will, you think you're choosing this and this, but like the chances are you will choose this because this, you know what I mean? Even though I just said the most vague thing ever.
No.
Like just to stir the pot of identity and, you know, the whole idea of a psychic sort of telling you where you're headed.
Did you know that Harry Chettoway has an identical twin?
No.
The guy that plays Mr. Mercedes on Mr. Mercedes has an identical twin.
I didn't know that.
Which is like,
Yeah.
Yeah, we got twins in my family. I don't know. I mean, I guess you kind of just pop out who you are, but you don't pop out who you are. You pop out like a historical entity of all the people that died before you.
Yeah.
All your ancestors.
Yeah.
You know, and now what they're learning with epigenetics is like, you know, your experience, your life experience and the things that you eat and the from the moment you're even been conceived in the womb, there's certain genetic traits that are being massaged open, is I guess the only term I can use. You know, one of the main studies on epigenetics was about mother being a good mother. And it was done on rats that lick their babies. Mm-hmm. And the rats that lick their babies, the process of licking opens in the baby a gene for licking babies, basically. Somebody look up that study, but that was like one of the first studies of epigenetics that was done. So like that is both simultaneously nurture and nature.
Yeah.
So I always like to think about, I'm actually, you know, talk about being alone. I'm deeply comforted by the ancestor, like the idea that my brain is actually this accumulation of all these people that I know from a couple generations. Like I know my, I feel connected. The furthest back person I feel connected to is my great great grandmother, Sophie, because I've heard a lot of stories about her, and she was this bohemian woman from Transylvania, And she like has all these things my mom and I still like talk about her. Cause she was alive when my mother was like way into college, her great grandmother.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're all in Chicago, like these immigrants in Chicago. And I have this like picture and this imagination. And I always think like how much of my behavior from birth is based on Sophie and like what Sophie was doing in like Hungary and like coming over, you know, through Ellis Island from you know, what is now modern Transylvania.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, I think about all those people, you know, and I like.
Did you always feel that way? Because something that I feel like I've talked about and noticed for me is that that's something that has evolved and developed as I've gotten older. But I do frequently identify this sort of teenage years as being the time when you are most defiant about being informed by all of the people, like for some of us. And I think at the time I was very interested in feeling like special, or I was very interested in I was so solipsistic that I was just like, I mean, I could certainly recognize like, yeah, I'm a lot like my dad. I didn't want to admit I was like my mom because we had a bad relationship. But
we're all, you exactly know, like yeah.
Which even that, it's like, oh, no, this is unique to me. Like daughters and mothers usually have a great time. But, you know, feeling like I was less interested in how I could be like other people and more interested in feeling, not necessarily in a good way, but feeling alone or feeling special or feeling broken in a certain way or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I really didn't tie that to my family at all. And then as I got older, I was so much more excited by and interested in what made me like other people, not just my family, but just other people that are walking around on the earth today. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'm wondering if you had that relationship to Sophie for as long as you can remember, or if it started to feel more important as you kind of matured out of a certain
time. Oh, I was like obsessed with all of those people when I was a kid. I was upset. Like I was actually weirdly like really titillated and obsessed by my parents' relationship and like even their sex life, you know, because they were like my source number. I know that sounds totally bizarre, and we'll get back to Oedipus.
It sounds vaguely bohemian. It sounds like, you know, parents who are more open about that kind of stuff, or I mean nude beaches, like, you know,
itself is, you know, I wanted to know how many times a week does a married couple have sex, how many does, you know, I was like very. And then my parents, when we moved to Delaware, had like, you know, they weren't getting along and it got real weird. And then I wanted to make sure that they were having like that their relationship was, I mean, all sorts of weird, you know, I wanted to know all about my father and what he did. I wanted to know all about my grandparents and what they did and what they were like when they were my age. I was like obsessed with the history of the source one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was interested in like, and fortunately my father was, and my mother as well, but my father was a very bombastic storyteller. So Irish. And so, you know, these stories were always outrageous and outlandish, and his relationship with his sisters in Ireland and all, you know, I have like a grab bag of so many stories from his growing up in Ireland. And, you know, I just remember like shortly before he died, he told me the not so great stories. And the things that he felt, and he didn't know he was going to die. It was very, very sudden. So only in hindsight am I like, why was he telling me that? But yeah, he told me this other alternate story, you know, like me and my sister, this alternate story of the same past that was, much sadder and really kind of harrowing and, you know, really not very, glittery and glamour and fun. Like when him and his friend would go fishing and they would steal fish out the back of you know, when they wouldn't catch fish, they'd steal fish off the fishing boats and then sell them over at this dock, you know, when he was 8 years old. Like, you know, just these fun stories of him throwing, he had a chemistry lab in his attic, and he would throw, you know, a string over the house to the front door. And when his older sisters were waiting for dates to come, he would knock on the door through the window.
Wow.
Like the string would go over through the window to the kitchen table, uh-huh. and he would like just knock on the door and watch his sisters go, ooh, and like get ready. You know, these like great stories. And then it was like, all of a sudden it was like, you know, a story like, my father didn't approve of me marrying your mother. And that's why they didn't come to the wedding. Mm. Because it was a Protestant Catholic marriage that he didn't have a good relationship with his father. Like these like things that I was like, you know, yeah. And I remember at the time I was so disturbed by that honesty from him that I like, it upset me deeply.
Did you question at the time? Like, why wouldn't you at least have peppered these through my
I don't know. We were driving cross country together, he and I, and he just decided to tell me all this shit. Huh. I don't know, but he died like 2 years later. So I'm glad that I told my sisters and my mom this, and they're all like, what? And in hindsight now, I'm like, I'm so honored that he felt like he could open up to me like that. Yeah. But at the time I was like, Dad, like in my mind, I was like, Dad, God, ooh, like, you know, like my grown ass, like father is finally opening up to me. And I'm like, God, you know, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
It made me so feel so emotional. And I didn't like it at the time that I like kind of forgot everything that he told me.
Yeah.
Like we talked for like 5 hours and I just remember being like, I'm not your friend.
You know? Which is an interesting thing to say for somebody who had such a vested interest in like the inner workings of their parents' relationship and stuff in a way that a lot of kids would be like, don't tell me that.
You got to be careful what you asked for. Gosh dang. I mean, it's funny because you got to be careful what you asked for, but like I'm so fortunate for that now, that experience now.
Yeah. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hello, Maximum Fun. I am Oliver Wong, scholar, journalist, DJ, etc.
And I'm Morgan Rold. I'm a music supervisor who loves stilettos. We host Heat Rocks, a music podcast where we talk to influential artists and scholars about the albums that changed their lives. On our most recent episode, we had the chance to talk with none other than R&B legend Macy Gray about one of her favorite albums, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Yeezy.
We get deep talking about everything from Kanye's college dropout days all the way up to his most recent shenanigans.
I just think it's weak, and I don't think he has to do that, and I was just disappointed.
So make sure you, dear listener, are subscribed, because you definitely do not want to miss this conversation.
Heat Rocks every Thursday right here on Maximum Fun.
I'm going to bop back to a little bit more high school before I get into this MASH game with you. But were you so how did your personality
Do you want to talk about the jerk shift?
The what?
I said, are we going to talk about the group masturbation stories?
To be honest with you, that to me, that sounds so weirdly normal. I don't. That's like.
I mean, so just to circle back to the jerk circle.
Yeah.
So
if we could. Spend just a few more minutes on that. No, I mean, we certainly can.
No, but
I was going to try to get a picture of like who your friends were when you were a teenager, and how much of that part of you kind of, how much of that wild child did carry over, because obviously you said you didn't feel like you fit in, but then you eventually were in a situation where you were going out with friends from the school, because you mentioned like being out with them and having a good time versus the religious girl who was trying to save everyone from the devil. Were you dating? Were you like, what was that kind of part of high school like for you?
Well, my two
and what were you
older
into,
sisters,
you know what I mean?
My two older sisters were extraordinarily beautiful. I mean, they still are, but like as high school girls. So I went and lived in Paris. My parents did a sabbatical. So I went to live in Paris when I was 7 and 8. And that implanted a perspective of a Parisian artist world. And I had this like image of myself as being like a cigarette smoking, like, you know, party girl, artist, bohemian, like wearing a beret and a black turtleneck mm-hmm. in a big brick loft in New York City or Paris, right? Yeah. And like, you know, I learned all about Gertrude Stein and like the salons that they had. And I was like reading all this stuff about going to lots of museums and like had this picture of like the Impressionism era in France. And like, I played my little violin in the streets for money. And I had this like dream of what I like, who I was, yeah. you know? And my sisters were 13 and 16. And they looked like they were like 18 and 21. Mm-hmm. And they had these, they were like gorgeous with these big breasts and like booties and like, you know, strong ass ladies. And like, I was trying to keep up all the time. And I remember my parents let my 13 and 16 year old sisters go with my dad, one of my dad's grad students, to a club, a Parisian club. And they almost, I remember they almost got taken home by MC Hammer. And they like hung out in the VIP section with MC Hammer. That's not maybe the person
that I would have expected you to bring up when we're painting this picture.
I mean, of course, MC Hammer is trying to like take home a 13-year-old girl. But, you know, but so I was like trying to be. And then I like became 6 foot tall when I was like 12. And I looked like I was a 35-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. Like, I've pretty much been this same person for a long ass time.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I then went to that, like, you know, I went from being, like, literally, like, a group masturbating feral. I had rats. I had lots and lots of rats that I had to leave behind. And people would call me Rat Girl, and I would, like, cycle around on my bike and, like, just try to like get boys to show me their dicks. Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't, not with the rats. I'd usually use the rats.
You somehow sensed that maybe that wasn't like the biggest turn on for boys.
I was like obsessed with sex. Yeah. I was obsessed with like, my sister was living with a boy in the house.
Oh, wow. Was it that thing where your parents were like, we would rather you be doing this here than elsewhere? Or was it just?
Well,
just,
sure. But she was also 17.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, she's eight years older than me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And we always had like lots of boys and people and like we had lots of foreign exchange students. Mm. And like, then my mom started going back to school and there'd be like students. She was like a very intense ageist as well. I mean, I'm sorry. She was very anti-ageist.
Well, I was going to say that you've already described something that starts to feel very ageless, especially in a community of intellectuals where the university. So you have like the people who are teaching the kids themselves, your age group, and everybody's kind of mixing it up.
I mean, yeah. And my parents had lots of dinner parties and there'd be like lots of cross, like my one friend, Jeremy Hobson's best friend was this woman named Betty Lazarus, who was like in her 60s.
Yeah.
And they were super good friends. You know, there was a lot.
Well, it's funny because the only other place I think of as that existing is what we do now, which is this sort of weird mix where suddenly you're working in an environment where like there are teenagers who are interning and there are, you know, cinematographers who are 80 and you have, and there is this sort of collective of people that you very quickly sort of start not thinking about how old people are.
Yes.
But I think you know, otherwise it's a little unusual.
Absolutely. I think it feels unusual socially in Los Angeles. Los mm-hmm. Angeles, I find to be really behind. Like, there's a lot of places and spaces in New York City where you can get, you know, a group, you know, a 60-year-old woman at a table with a 21-year-old woman, and they're having a blast.
Yeah.
And they're not like, my mom's friend. You know what I mean? It's like, they're just friends.
Yeah.
And I've been living in Charleston, and I made friends with a lot of much older women than me, much older than me in Charleston as well. They were too crazy. I had to dip out. They were too wild.
Oh, ladies.
Yeah. They were
Charleston
like,
ladies.
Charleston ladies, watch out. It's like that town is like 80% women and most of them are like rich and on their third career.
Yeah.
And like drunk as hell and like bored.
Yeah.
And just want to get real fucked up and like hang out in their mansions late at night, like talking about, like, you know, Ted Turner or whatever the hell. But
so specific. I love it.
Oh, Teddy. But my mom went back to college in her 40s, and so I think she was very sensitive to ageism because she didn't want to be boxed out. And she went back to art school, and so she was in art school when I was like 9, and I would show up, and so I had like I mean, it was definitely like, I definitely thought I was pretty cool. You know, and like had a sense of what cool was that was not defined by anybody but me.
And I think the rats were a dead giveaway of that. Which, by the way, all due respect to rats. I had pet mice, so I'm not, you know. Yeah.
We had lots of
animals. I'm a little
animals.
Squeamish about rat tails just because I'm used to mice tails. So when I see like street rats, I do have a sort of like a, you should be a mouse.
I always have a moment with a street rat where I'm like, oh, you're so cute.
Yeah.
Like, come here, little baby.
I get it.
In like New York or whatever.
Yeah.
You see a street rat, what's up, little baby?
Hi, guy.
Hey.
Yeah.
I think, like, I dressed super crazy. So when I was still in Illinois at around 10, so you got to be like 10, but I'm actually acting like, I'm like a 10-year-old, but also like an 18-year-old in a really weird way. And then when I was like 11, I started, after I came back from, I always kind of dressed weird and I made my own clothes. And then I started getting bullied for the way that I dressed severely and like beat up and physically beat up. And when I lived in Paris, I used to get bullied, physically bullied too. Like real, like I had this crazy black eye.
Jesus.
And just very physical, like, and so I joined the boys' wrestling team. And they,
my podcast is not long enough for these stories.
They weren't really into that. So I got really bullied by the boys on the boys' wrestling team. That, like, my mom was always late to pick me up. And there, this one kid I remember would always take it a little too far afterwards. You know what I mean? But yeah, there's a lot of physical fighting and violence and like in with other students. And I remember waking up every morning and knowing that I would be ridiculed and like picked on and violent, like could potentially face violence with what I put on. And I was like, I was like, screw it. And I would just made me want to dress crazier.
Yeah.
And so I remember being in middle seventh grade, I think. And all of a sudden, Nirvana hit the Midwest. Apparently they'd been around for a little bit longer than that. Nirvana hit the Midwest, and all of a sudden I became super cool. And all of my wacky ass outfits, like the 90s hit like the Midwest suddenly.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was like the coolest girl. And then I figured out that everybody would then like come over to my house, and then that's when I could be like, let's play Spin the Bottle. But instead of Spin the Bottle, you have to take your pants off.
Yeah.
I was like,
I just want to see what you got down there. I don't even want to kiss you.
Yeah.
I just want to get right
to, you know,
to that.
All sorts of elaborate Spin the Bottle games and, you know, little creeper. And I was like, look at my rats. Now look at my boobs.
But yeah, I have to get into this MASH game. I'm only saying that because I'm looking at the time, realizing I have to get on a call in 15 minutes. I'm very angry about that.
Oh, no.
I'm very, very angry. And I'm sure everyone that is listening to this is like, I can't believe you're cutting that story off, Barney. I feel everything now. I'm like, that's okay, guys. Now Brida and I are friends, so I'm just going to get all that information offline, and you can wonder. You can always wonder
what
we talked about. Okay, so for this MASH game, for this first category, I'm going to ask you to give me three people from your. The inspiration for this question is Sophie based, so you could sort of see where I'm going with it. If there are people outside of your family that you would want to meet, the impetus for it was three people that you will not have the opportunity to engage with because they're no longer alive. At least you were not maybe in this, in our physical form. Okay. You will not be able to engage with that. We can sort of magically create this opportunity for you to have a conversation with from the past.
Wait, what?
Like in this alternate universe I'm creating,
yeah,
you have the opportunity to meet three people who are no longer living that you can have like a conversation with.
Oh, I mean, definitely like Neanderthal.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely need to be like hanging out with like some Nordic Neanderthal
mm-hmm.
person.
Great.
Definitely. Wait, this can be people who I've met before or never met.
You know what? This category would be like, yeah, someone you that you did not get a chance to talk to
that
ever
I've
before.
Never talked to.
Like I thought you would put Sophie like on here, but Queen... you're not putting Sophie on here. You're going straight to people that are not part of your family.
Probably a Neanderthal. Probably Queen Boudica.
Uh huh.
I need to know about that Celtic uprising and like, you know, all of the other shit. Like one of the librarians at the Library of Alexandria. I just really need to know. Wait, how many do am I picking?
Just
three. Oh, we should definitely put Sophie on. Okay.
I really bullied you in that. Speaking of bullying, I apologize.
That's all right. I love a bully. You didn't even hear the rest of that story. I was like, bring it.
Well,
that shit never got me down.
Yeah, I did not have that defiance. I was very meek about being bullied. And so I just started pretending I was sick and I would not go to school and stuff. So I am very envious of that sort of like, if something is hurting me, I will face it and sort of be defiant of it. That's not something that I had. So I'm very envious of that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you can have that now.
I think I'm better about it now.
I mean, I get really scared sometimes, but about other weird shit.
Yeah.
Not normal shit I get scared about, but like.
I got to talk to you about that offline. God damn it. All right. Listen, I got to move on. This category, I don't know why I've turned this into a chore that everyone hates. That's not what this game is at all. This next category is, okay, let's do three movies or books. Or really any form of storytelling, graphic novel, whatever, television show, three things that you wish you could jump into and just be in that world. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character in it. It's just a thing that you would love to sink into and just be in from fiction.
From fiction.
Mm-hmm. So it could be from a book, could be from a film, but three.
So I can't pick like... Julius Caesar's like war memoirs.
Oh, from history?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Okay, Julius Caesar's memoirs. I just want to know what that Rome was like. Definitely Neil Gaiman's Sandman comic books.
Great.
Not gonna lie, I like them comic books.
Yeah, great.
Handmaid's Tale? Just kidding.
Just I want to get on in there and just stir some shit up.
Who doesn't want to live in that world?
Yeah.
That
I would say, though, when I read that book over and over and over again as like a 12 or 13 year old, I think I would have picked that because it did stir up this sense of defiance in me. It did stir up that feeling of like, if I can get in there, I don't care if I die. I would da-da-da-da. Like it did sort of boil up to the surface those feelings of like, ooh, how dare you? Yeah, for sure. It was my favorite book for such a long time.
Oh my gosh, do you watch the show?
I do.
Okay.
I fell off during the second season.
Yeah, me too.
Interesting. Okay. So Julius Caesar's memoirs, Game and Sandman series.
And ugh, what? I'm like looking at your bookshelf trying to save myself.
I know. I feel like you both probably see some Game and stuff in there.
Oh, like you know what I've always wanted to do is be like Blackbeard.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Or like, I'm like, was Grace O'Malley around? Grace O'Malley. Okay. Do you know the history of Grace O'Malley? I'm like, this isn't even a fiction. Vaguely. This is just like historical figures that I like want to be like on the ship for.
That's great. That's great. Okay. Next category, three foods that in this reality are this reality we're creating are not only not bad for you, but you can have them in perpetuity without any negative ramifications. So if you don't eat meat, but it's delicious, but you ethically in this universe, there is no such thing as like a problem with, you know, killing an animal or whatever. It's just the taste. It's a feeling. You know what I'm saying? Or if you're allergic to something,
I'm like a vegan slash vegetarian slash not anything, never dogmatic.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of these.
Great.
That I don't eat anymore because of the ethical thing. So it would be foie gras.
Great.
And filet mignon. I haven't had foie gras or filet mignon in a long ass time.
Okay, give me one more. Unless you want me to make that the same, sort of the same lumped together.
That I could just eat forever and ever?
Mm-hmm.
Foie gras, filet mignon. Oh, you're going to lump them or not?
I can lump them.
Donuts.
Great.
Like Krispy Kreme. And ragu.
I love the character who talks about ragu in that voice.
Ragu? I'm like, wait, ragu is really gross.
Yeah.
What is the meat sauce?
Yeah, I think it is like not, it's not marinara, it's bolognese.
Bolognese.
Bolognese. Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
Yes.
Three people that you get to switch bodies with for a day.
Probably somebody with a really big dick. Because I want to touch it. Somebody I get to switch bodies with. Definitely like a basketball player.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I could just say
pro.
Yeah, but which one?
I don't know.
Probably Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay.
I just want to be, and he's so friendly.
Yeah.
Friendly and large. Probably Shaquille O'Neal, probably like, I think about switching bodies with people a lot.
I figured this would be a good category for you.
I mean, this is basically our job. Like, this is our life. It's like dreaming up what it feels like to switch bodies with people. I guess somebody with a weird, rare illness, just to know,
mm-hmm.
you know, I look at a lot of like weird, rare illness YouTube things.
Mm.
Okay. Let's say I'd like to switch bodies with. This is hard. This game is hard.
I know, and it's all just spur of the moment too. I apologize that
No, that's good. It's good.
You to improvise.
I would want to switch bodies with Hillary Clinton.
Great.
And Jennifer Lopez.
Okay, great. That was easy.
I think I'm thinking about it too hard.
Yeah, no,
I gotta really think.
It's the nature of the beast. It truly is. Okay, next category is three romantic, sexy time partners from wherever that you're engaging with in this alternate universe.
Mila Jovovich. Mm-hmm. How do you say her name?
I think it's Mila Jovovich.
Mila Jovovich from Fifth Element.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all I've. The only thing I want to have sex with.
Yeah, she really she's got some.
Santa Claus? That's a weird one, but he sneaks in at night.
Great.
James Momoa? What's that
Jason
guy?
Momoa.
Jason Momoa.
Yeah. He is like a fictional character that walks around in real life.
Yeah. That guy is really. Maybe him and his wife.
Yeah.
At the same time. What's her name?
Shit about shit.
The Zoe Kravitz's mama.
Lisa Bonet?
Lisa Bonet.
Oh, yeah. She is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that's Jason Momoa / Lisa Bonet.
That's a good call. That's a really good call. I cannot believe the countdown I'm having right now to this call. Okay. Next category is three styles of.
Do you want to.
It's going to be a forever call.
Oh, okay.
Three styles of dress that are there. It's everything is equal in comfort. So however it looks, whether it's a, you know, a bustle or trousers or whatever, it all has the same degree of comfort from any era that you could, that you could just like magically kind of sport.
Okay, the Kenosis women who wore ball gowns with their tits out, there was little things with the tits fully out. I always thought that would be great. I love the like Amazonian. This is all just tit based.
Right.
Like let's, the Amazonian
tit-based category. Great.
The Amazonian women who would like wear the armor and then they'd cut off one of their boobies for archery.
Archery, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just about boobs.
Great.
The whole section.
I'm in.
And then like the '70s.
Great.
Right?
Great. None of those clothes are
like the
birth
of polyester. Yeah. Everyone like stank probably.
Oh my God. So much sweat. That's absolutely true.
Polyester is
absolutely true.
But that's good because I sweat and I like stink anyway. So it'd be like,
everyone would be like, we all stink. Who can smell anymore?
Yeah.
Three places in the world, whether you've been there or not, that you would like to have a vacation home.
But vacation home?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And by the way, this will be where the mansion apartment chakra house comes.
Martha's Vineyard.
Great.
Paris, mm-hmm. and Petra.
Great. Great. Final category, supernatural powers.
Reading people's thoughts.
Great.
Teleportation, so I'd never have to take public transport or ride in a car again.
Great.
It's sometimes it's not about the journey. And it's another superhero thing. Maybe to swim in the sea.
Great. Yes. Oh my God, that's my stomach. Like apparently swimming in the sea makes me hungry. Okay. Now I just very quickly need you to just tell me when to stop. You know, it's a couple seconds worth because I got to figure. I'm just figuring out the number I'm going to use to eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
Okay.
So tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay, great. I'm going to pause this, do some quick calculations. I'm going to come back with your 100% guaranteed fictitious math future. Okay, here we go. Number one, I want to congratulate you on your ability to communicate with Neanderthals.
Oh,
gonna get a lot
good.
Of questions answered. I hope that you'll pass that back to me.
By the way, we took the 23andMe test and we have like an unusually high percentage of Neanderthal in our blood.
Yeah, of course you do, because that's incredibly interesting.
My grandfather looked straight up like a Neanderthal. Do you know they're supposed to be smarter than humans?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the mystery of that is very attractive to me. My dad did the 23andMe thing, so now I'm like, I kind of want to mooch off of his information. But I'm also like very curious to see, because my dad did it and his sister did it, and they had like very different data come back.
Oh, really?
And they have the same parents, so that caused a bit of a scandal. It was like, wait a minute, what does this mean? And I don't know what it means.
Your grandmother is just
that's gulp. How they find out. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. See, that would be too interesting. That would be too interesting, man, for me to be able to get away with. Okay, so conversations with the Neanderthals. You've also had the ability to switch bodies with Ms. Hillary Clinton.
Ooh,
I'm sorry you didn't get a penis on that one, but you're the one who picked two women, so you really decreased your chances.
Oh, true.
You can also visit the world of Grace O'Malley. I'm very excited that you got that. Where you can eat copious amounts of filet mignon, foie gras, good. And there's just zero ethical question about it. It's just all good. You have a vacation mansion in Paris.
Perfect.
Where you prance around wearing your ball gown with your tits hanging out.
Yes. Okay.
Much
cool.
To the pleasure of your lover, Mila Jovovich.
Yes. Yes. This
and after
amazing.
You make sweet, sweet love to her, you can jump into the sea and swim and breathe and just be with the sea creatures with your psychic ability, but your supernatural ability.
Oh.
Pretty good, huh?
So
that's really
good.
Worked out. I didn't forget anything, did I? No. Okay, people, find Mr. Mercedes if you haven't. We've mentioned that you can also see Brita on Unreal. I had a very pleasant surprise when I was guilt watching The Affair and you popped up for about yeah. a minute.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, is she going to be the new star? I don't know what happens because I haven't seen the last episode. Maybe I have. Maybe. But that was a thrill. Okay. Talk to you guys next time on the podcast. Bye. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.